translation. My dear Father, please describe factually the symptoms of this manifest world. What is its background? How is it created? How is it conserved? Under whose control is all this being done? So anyway, I was kind of looking at it here because I have this extremely analogical mind. I want to break everything into parts. So this is Analogical Friday. So basically, I think the next slide, if you go to number five, slide five there. Yeah, okay. Number five. Then these are the five things he's asking about. Narada Muni is asking Lord Brahma about the cosmic manifestation. He's asking about the Rupam, the Adhisthanam, the Shristam, the Samstam, and Param. Param means, you know, Param is like the, you know, all the Rupam, Adhisthanam, Shristam, and Samstam are all within the Param. Yeah. And here we see in that nice example, actually, the picture I put there is the Nishimadeva Temple, which is next to the main temple in Manipur, up in the Himalaya Mountains, pretty much. But who created it? You know, what are the symptoms? What does it look like? Does it have a closed patio or an open patio? Does it have two levels of stairs? You know, where did it come from? You know, who's it resting? Okay. So number six, next slide. So look at the background of these verses and these questions. He's asking these questions. But look at the little background. In this canto so far, there's been Sukadeva Goswami talking to Maharaj Parikshit, chapters 1, 2, 3 of this canto. He read those. And he explains, you know, meditation on the hearing aloud and meditating on the Virat Rup, the first step in valorization, pantheism. In the second chapter, he goes to the Lord in the heart, mysticism, or Paramatma, you know. And third chapter, Bhagavan, pure devotional service to changing heart. Because the realization of Sat and Chit, Brahman, Paramatma, you know, Gaudiya Vishnu, Shirdaksha Vishnu, these are still contaminated with our own, you know, selfishness. We don't want Krishna to really become a full person. Yeah, I see the hand of God and things. For example, several Jewish people have told us that in Jewish culture, God is so great we can never know him. He's always one step ahead of us. So basically we can see his footprints and hear him talking out of a burning bush, something like that. But we can never quite catch up with him. You know? What I would say we might consider actually is because we don't want to catch up with him. You know? And so there's still a little bit of impersonalism in Paramatma realization without Bhagavan. Of course, in Bhagavan, then we realize the Paramatma is. That's Krishna's hand, you know. That's Krishna's nature, you know, so on. So Sukadeva Goswami in three chapters, Brahman, Paramatma, Bhagavan, pantheism, mysticism, monotheism, like that, everything. But then Maharaj Parikshit says, that's very nice, that's a wonderful presentation, and so purifying. But I need to be more purified because he had given up his house, horse, wife, kids, kingdom, being everybody's best friend. But still, he was attached to his body. Still, he was conscious of his body. And if you're going to be bitten by a snake bird or run over by an automobile and hear your pelvis being crushed under the wheels of the car, you know, and it's like, good thing not to be conscious of your body. Well, it's at a very great distance, you know. Poor fellow, that's what his pelvis crushed by. A big dump truck, you know, crunch, crunch. Yeah. So look at him from the very attached fast and like that. Yeah. And so by hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, we have to come to this ecstatic position. What is it, Gopal Bhatta Goswami, he used to recite Srimad Bhagavatam, I think it was in six different tunes or something, you know. And other Goswamis would listen to him, and would go over and over and come over again. And of course, in ecstasy, you know, they're watching the audience, see how they react, everything else. So that was the first part. Now we're in the second part, which is Brahma to Narada. And Narada is asking Brahma, and Brahma is telling the basic thing. What is this material world? What is the spiritual world? And how to go from here to there? And then the class finishes. Do you have any questions? And sometimes the student does. Other than that, then the teacher says, okay, now you go and explain it to other people. That's the basic process. Of course, in the previous chapter, number four, before he started speaking Srimad Bhagavatam, Sukadeva Goswami gave so much glorification. First he said, let me offer my obeisances to the Lord, who is, namo namaha, namo namaha. And then he said, he'd be pleased with me, prasidatam, and he'd be satisfied with me. Yeah? So I can describe these things. And the Lord he was describing, if you look at it, pretty much again, it's the Lord who creates this world, the Lord who maintains this world, the Lord who enters in, the Lord who's everybody's friend. So pretty much he's not going on beyond Mahavishnu, you know, that aspect of Paramatma, you know, at this level. Yeah. And then finally, in the last few chapters, 8, 9, 10, there's a variety of things, but especially there's the Vishnu to Brahma. No, not Vishnu to Narada. Here's a good one. Vishnu to Brahma. I made a mistake there. Vishnu to Brahma, not to Narada. And that's the four nutshell verses, which all of us who are Bhakti Bhai Baba should know. And I memorized them and forgot them. Aham evasam eva dre nanyad yad sarasat param tashchad aham yari tashchad yuva shushe kusos mi aham. And the rest I can't remember. So you have to find some way besides memorizing them, but also refreshing them in there. And, but pretty much that's using them. And you see Prabhupada using the important verses again and again. So if we just take the time to cover it when we see it and kind of recite ourselves and let it go into our heart, then these important verses will be right there, very solid, foundation piers in our philosophy. So that's what we are now. This conversation between Narada and Brahma is starting, and not too surprisingly, it starts off with questions. Let's go on to the next slide, which is, I can't really remember on it, something. Okay. So now you should see basically the questions. I'm going to read through those. This is 251, maybe about like eight verses, where Narada asks his questions. And basically establishes the whole format, because Brahma's just going to ask him. Sri Narada Muni asked Brahmaji, O chief amongst the demigods, O firstborn living entity, I beg to offer my respectful obeisances unto you. Please tell me that transcendental knowledge, which specifically directs them to the truth of the individual soul and the super soul. So we're not going to Krishna in Goloka. Yeah. My dear father, today's verse, please describe factually, the symptoms of this manifest world. Please describe factually the symptoms of this manifest world. And that is rupam. So symptoms are rupam. What is the form? What do we see? What is its background? That's the adhishtam. How is it created? Adhishtam. And how is it conserved? Because after everything is finished, where does it go? So how is it created? How is it manifest? And how is it conserved after it's not manifest? And behind all of this, who is controlling all this? Under whose control is all this being done? Next slide, number 8. Okay. My dear father, all this is known to you scientifically because whatever was created in the past, whatever will be created in the future, or whatever is being created at present, as well as everything within the universe, is within your grip, just like a walnut. Okay. My dear father, what is the source of your knowledge? This is interesting now. Okay. He's asking that. About this. Under whose protection are you standing? And under whom are you working? What is your real position? Do you alone create all living entities with material elements by your personal energy? This is significant because Bhagavatam is going to be aimed at a very intelligent audience for the most part. Of course, it's very, very good for simple people, but actually it's the most elevated Sanskrit, most elevated poetry, everything else, and it's taking part of the whole culture, which is spread all over India, you know, we are familiar with Vedanta Sutra, Karma Mimamsa, Mimamsa Sutras of Jaimini, Paramanavada of Kapila, and so many things are familiar with these, and worship of Brahma, this and that. So it's not surprising that people may think that Brahma is the supreme. You know? I know, even now, you, for example, like salesmen and stuff like that, when they're training them, you can do it, you're number one, you know, this and that, and there's nothing that can stop you. Karma Mimamsa, which is pretty much passion, you know, that you're the creator, you're the controller, like that. You know? So he's asking them, are you under somebody else's protection? What is your knowledge? As the spider very easily creates the network of his cobweb and manifests his power of creation without being defeated by others, so also you yourself, by employment of your self-sufficient energy, create without any other's help. Whatever can be understood by the nomenclature, whatever we can understand by the nomenclature, characteristics, and features of a particular thing, superior, inferior, or equal, eternal or temporary, is not created by any source other than that of your lordship, thou so great. Yet we are moved to wonder about the existence of someone more powerful than you. Ah. When we think of your great austerities and perfect discipline, although your good self is so powerful in the matter of creation. So, of course, this is very natural, observation, because Narada can see that it's a fact, that Lord Brahma is doing austerities, but if he's God, then what if he does austerities? Krishna doesn't have to do austerities. So he asks him, I see this, and I'm wondering, is there somebody behind you? My dear Father, you know everything, and you are the controller of all. Therefore, may all that I have inquired from you be kindly instructed to me, so that I may be able to understand it as your students. And text number 11, you can then, I guess we'll keep it up. Number 11, then, is Father's Purport. Okay. So that's the general questions. He's asking them, these questions pretty much are right here. It's just verse number 2 asks the questions about this phenomenal world. And then number 8, I think it was, or 5 or 6, whatever, then he asks them, how do you know all these things? Is there somebody else you're worshiping like that? They're pretty simple, straightforward questions. And he eliminates them. He describes his position very clearly, glorifies him. Like that. So very nice basis. And this will be the basis then for the next few chapters. So Prabhupada says, the inquiries by Narada Muni on the basis of factual cause and effect. On the basis of factual cause and effect, how things are really working, appear very reasonable. The atheists, however, put forward many self-made theories without any touch of cause and effect. The manifested world, as well as the spirit soul, is still unexplained by the godless atheists through the medium of experimental knowledge, although they have put forward many theories manufactured by their fertile brains. So there's the quantum mechanics, relativity theory, and now string theory, which I never really, out of university, I don't know what's going on. But I think that's the most advanced process like that. And then, of course, we were traveling to South America. We were able to make our presentation. What is it called? Spirit? Science, spirituality, something. Psyche, science, and spirituality. I forgot what it was. Yeah, nice title, though. Psyche, spirit, and science. Science, spirit, and psyche, spirituality. Anyway, it was about Carl Jung and the Bhagavatam. And we attracted some very nice people. We can continue with it. It's a very nice preaching field. And one of them is a Nobel laureate candidate, Umberto Maturana. And he's trying to do the same thing. He's a very nice person, trying to figure out what's going on, what is the world. And I mentioned him before. And his idea, his explanation was that that Darwin was presenting was not biology. It was Lamarckian economics, that given a limited resource base, then there'll be competition between people for those resources and this and that and this and that, But he said, that's economics, not biology, survival of the fittest. Then he goes on to say, if you look at things, we see that those species that survive are those that learn how to cooperate, try to cooperate, and those that try to kill everybody else don't do well at all, So, of course, on a social level, we can see this. We can look at it and consider it. But he also looks at it apparently at a strictly biological level, in terms of biological entities, down to a very fine level. So we had a very nice discussion with him and our group and his group, and he asked us to come to visit him for maybe 4 or 5 hours. So a very nice program. The 5 devotees came, and 5 or 6 people in his group community. And so I would say, in terms of our perspective, he's a little beyond the route, but basically what the Bhagavatam is describing, as we understand, is Hiranyagarbha. But behind all this manifestation of different things, the route, there's a very potent, powerful, golden seed that makes it all happen. And behind that, of course, is the Paramatma himself, and then so on. So for someone to realize this garbha we call them, Hiranyagarbha, his conception is much more advanced than most people. We don't even realize that pantheism is probably called Virat Root. So that he has his developed theory, and he has different aspects of it and how it's going on. And does somebody really know how it works? And that's what Brahma is asking now, and Narada is asking Brahma. On the basis of factual cause and effect, what are the facts do you know like that? Yeah? So it's a very elevated thing. I'm kind of saying that the scientists haven't been able to do that. They're speculating. Maybe it's like this, string theory, quantum theory, everything else like that. And what to speak of the manifested world, he also points out that we can't explain the spirit's soul, the Atma. Next slide, number 12. Contrary to such mental speculative theories of creation, however, Narada wanted to know all the facts of creation in truth, tattvataha, and not by theories. Next slide, number 15. Transcendental knowledge, regarding the soul and the super soul includes knowledge of the phenomenal world and the basis of its creation. In the phenomenal world, 3 things are factually observed by any intelligent man: the living beings, the manifested world, and the ultimate control over them. There's a picture up here of some fellow sitting under a tree and apple falling on his head. Which is like, So Isaac Newton, that's the story, is supposed to be inventing the law of gravity when an apple fell on his head. So he was observing, I'm here, and then there's a control over the phenomenal world, which is living into the material world, the apple tree, and I'm here experiencing this, and there's a control over the phenomenal world, and actually, is there a control over me? well, we've mentioned this, that actually he was very, very, as more, he was a theologian, actually. He wasn't a materialist. He was a theologian, and his study of material nature was to see how God is doing this, how God is actually controlling material nature, as well as, you know, God is being the master of living things. So he was observing all these things. You see, sometimes when Prabhupada's preaching to people, I would say often, you know, if it's an intelligent man, of course, you know, if you're dishonest with yourself, you're not going to be intelligent. If you're just unfortunate and you're taking intoxication or intoxicating yourself with crazy ideas and, you know, grandeur, then also you're not going to be intelligent. But sometimes people are intelligent. They're living pretty much in the mode of goodness. They have a job like a lawyer, a little bit where they and their wife and their family are trying to help other people. You know, and specifically thinking of one of the conversations, a video you've probably seen it in Australia. I think Prabhupada's talking to the lawyer. And so Prabhupada says, you know, are you the controller? And he starts off with that question, you know. And so many people may not have thought about this. But then someone like Prabhupada, you know, Socrates, he asks you, are you the controller? And they argue about this and that, well, science and this and that and, you know, so forth and so on. And probably, you know, politely, but clearly in a simple, in a logical fashion, in a intellectual fashion, it makes the person to accept that, well, basically I can accept that I'm not the controller, you know. So the next question is, is there a controller like that? And you start talking about it and you see the seasons come and go and this and that happens, you know. Here it's amazing because we've had this freak winter on the continents, and it's been down to freezing, you know, below freezing. We had 12 water pipes burst in our little, you know, temporary motorhome here. Not motorhome, it's a mobile home thing, you know, permanent prefab place. So we had to get those fixed so we could move in. It was common. You know, people weren't ready for this. So it's always a very cold thing. Is somebody in control of that or not? Well, who knows? But the strange thing is that springtime is coming. And even though some days it's been below freezing, still all these trees are just popping out. I mean, in white, pink, it goes to the ambulance. The name of our boulevard here is Medical Center Parkway. So all these, and it goes by towards the medical center. So all these big trees are popping out of beautiful pink and white blooms. The magnolia trees are coming out even to the point of having buds on them. We call it daffodils are just popping up with a beautiful yellow. And so many everywhere, so many, you know, flowers are coming out. I think, what is it, you know? It's still overcast. It's still cold sometimes. You know, what is it? Is the ground temperature? Or is the duration of the days, you know? So there's something which is causing, and maybe there's something subtle behind it. Mother Earth said this is the right time, you know, so on, you know. She stopped taking birth control pills. Mother Earth. And her body starts to function, yeah. And then also I noticed outside my window here, there's a storm gutter, and the two birds look like they were fighting for territoriality over where they're going to build their nests. So the animals are also things. It's springtime, you know. So, you know, the things like this, discussing them, you start off with this, a good, we discuss it ourselves with our own mind. And, you know, pretty soon our intelligence is quite ample to discuss it in different ways. We argue with ourselves, we talk to other people. And after a while, we have an intelligent description of what we're doing. In the Bible somewhere, I wish I knew where it was, it says, in your heart, you should have faith like a little child, you know. Very simple, gentle, but in your head, you should be as clever as a snake. As clever as a snake. And so the same thing. You know, we try to be very clever and clear and intellectual in these things, establish it very clearly intellectually. At the same time, appreciating that in the end, we have to accept our position of being little children, you know, playing with things on the edge of the ocean. Okay, number 14. The intelligent man, I guess this is Confucius, the superior man, The intelligent man can see that neither the living entity nor the phenomenal world, living entity nor the phenomenal world, are creations of chance. The symmetry of creation and its regulated actions and reactions suggests the plan of an intelligent brain. Suggests the plan of an intelligent brain behind them, and by genuine inquiry, one may find out the ultimate cause with the help of one who knows them factually, like that. So if you tell a child some story about this and that, you know, somebody just won't accept that he's intelligent enough to be able to live and survive and so on. So something is crazy story. He just won't accept it. You know? One man, his child always wanted to get ice cream, you know, pestering him every day to buy ice cream for him and chuckling back. So finally he told him, actually, somehow like, I don't know if I can do this, you know. He told him that when he was playing that song, that when he was telling everybody he didn't have any more ice cream. So she can't believe it for some time. You know? But actually sometimes he's a little more intelligent. You know? So intelligence suggests this. And the natural thing, like a child or anybody else, is then to go to an authority, go to a scientist, you know, go to somebody. It's just a natural part of epistemology. You know? When we do this, then our intelligence gives us the orientation and everything else to really understand, you know, to actually find out the ultimate cause of everything. We put a cuckoo clock in here. This is a nice example of, you know, how it suggests a creator like that. This word chance, it's a wonderful word just to beat on. As I remember the etymology, it comes from the French word, and it means to fall out. You know, the apple chanced the tree. That's what it means. It doesn't mean it fell out. It fell out. complex DNA sequences occur by falling out. What does that mean? There's no explanation of any cause. You know? It's a naming fallacy. It's happening by chance. Chance is causing it. The word chance has no meaning in terms of cause. Okay. Bertrand Russell, again a quotation, our Nobel laureate, he said that chance is the most important concept in the 20th century because nobody has any idea what it means. So if you talk to people about this in push, a chance event, a random event, you know, statistics is based upon random events. But you go to any basic statistics textbook and look up their definition of what is a random event. A random event is an event the outcome of which cannot be predicted. Right? You know, it's or the cause, you know, you don't know what's going to happen. That's all it says. Netty, 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 netty. Bob didn't cause it, Susie didn't cause it, the government didn't cause it, the weather didn't cause it. Yeah. So that would mean that all the trees turning colors and all springtime manifesting itself is all happening by chance. Okay. It's all a random event. No, someone's suggestion of a regular an intelligent brain behind the whole thing. Okay, then we have another 15. Oh, thank you. Okay, that's the end of our slideshow. So Father actually has a kind of short report like that. So, you know. So again, that's kind of our presentation. We're just going on here with this kind of same thing again, you know, same questions. The sages are asking the same thing. What is Manishuranya? What are the incarnations? How does Krishna create this world? How is it manifested? But now we're going back to the person who spoke it to Narada Muni, who spoke it to Vyasadeva, who spoke it to Sukadeva Goswami, who spoke it to Sutta and Maharaj Pariksit, who's speaking it to the sages of Manishuranya. So we'll take it back, you know, and to the original source, and we can understand that going through this kind of parampara type thing. So any questions or comments?
Yeah, you got to give me a little bit more time here.
Okay.
Now only us on Skype can be heard. Okay, now I turned off the mute for everybody. Okay, yeah. So, anyone have any questions or comments? Maharaj, I have two questions for you. One is,
okay.
I've asked this before. I'm sorry, I'm such a dullard. I still just don't get it. As far as Hiranyagarbha, as you're indicating that that's a higher realization than Virata. So, of course, Hiranyagarbha means golden seed. So is that Paramatma, or is it a stage between, a realization between the Paramatma realization and that of Virata?
Okay, this is, we're being instructed by a Bhava program. It's nice. It's going through, like, you know, so we're just finishing off the fourth canto right now. And the real creation of the material world in detail, of course, is going to occur right now. You know, Brahma's going to describe it, and that's how it's engineered. And that's not a surprise, because Brahma's an engineer, you know. So we're really going to get into the details of how he set it up. And how the elements manifest one after another, what the hierarchy of the elements is, how Brahma actually Vishnu fits in, how they fits in. And then after that, it'll be described again in the last three chapters. And so I think it's described, basically it's described what the Virat root, what the description of creation of the elements, creation of the demigods, what it feels like to be the Virat root. And then it goes to the third canto, you go to, what's the third canto, Narada Muni, and yeah, go to, okay, yeah, we go to Vidura and Udava, meeting. And they mostly discuss kind of Leela like that, pretty much. But then when he goes to Maitreya, Vidura is supposed to ask about the Dwarka pastimes, because they already know about the, you know, the creation of by Mahavishnu. And so is there something subtler? And the idea is that, yeah, the Dwarka pastimes are actually subtler, not a gross compensation for people who are too attached to form. So when he goes to Maitreya, he's supposed to ask about that. But he's feeling a little shy because other people are there, and he doesn't want to hop out into these advanced topics. So he asks him the same thing, the same questions, Abhistanam, Rupam, Shastam, Param. And so Maitreya again describes how, you know, Brahma woke up, and Mahavishnu does this, and all that kind of stuff. And I think maybe even two times or something, he goes through it. Yeah. Yeah. So, and then I think Kapila, I don't think, well, if Kapila goes into it again also. I think it does too. There's the elements, that's for sure. But also Mahavishnu. So you see it about one, two, three, four, five, six times. And in this whole process, that's where, you know, I to make it a thesis, I'd have to go back through and give it up all the details. But my observation is that, yeah, it's talking about, first off, the Virat root conception. And that's just the form, the whole universe is a form, you know, like that. And but what we're conscious of is the manifestation. The trees are the hairs in your body, the trees in the grass are the hairs in your body, the rivers are his veins, the ocean is his stomach, you know, the great mountains are his bones, okay. Yeah, but behind that, there is like this, Hiranyagarbha. And it says that, Kapila Deva says that the Hiranyagarbha yogis, you know, they go to the planet of Brahma, and when Brahma gets temporarily released, they go with him, and they kind of take birth again, and he comes back, you know. So, and so that's this, you know, conception, you know, Hiranyagarbha yogis. But beyond that, then, is understanding of it is coming to the real conception of who's it going to be. Rabadaksha Vishnu is Paramatma, but Shiradaksha Vishnu and Rabadaksha Vishnu are both Paramatmas. And Rabadaksha Vishnu is the Paramatma of all the elements, and Shiradaksha Vishnu is the companion, you know, Paramatma with everybody, you know, when they come into it. You know, so Rabadaksha Vishnu is the Paramatma of this body. So that's a more that's where Brahma actually sees him every day. He sees him, you know, face to face, like we see the deities at Mangalarti or something. You know, he sees Rabadaksha Vishnu and prays to him, and like that, something like that. So, I'm still working on the structure of the universe myself, but that's our impression so far. you know, this level, you can see the difference, you know, seeing the gross thing and realizing it's connected and starting to understand and feel and work with and appreciate and contact the sea behind that, you know, behind it all. You know. And finally see the form of it, you know, but with no love. This is the Gravidakshaya Vishnu form. That's my understanding. Yeah.
So Gravidakshaya Vishnu is the Hiranyagarbha.
No, it's not quite that. It's the whole point. It's the whole point is that the Hiranyagarbha conception is a little subtler than the Paramatma is kind of like, no, when we say Paramatma, it's Brahman. So what's a Brahman? It's all these details and everything else. And so you start realizing that it's all there, it's all exists, you know. That's how you start coming to Hiranyagarbha. The golden seed, you know, it's everywhere, you know. You know, the revolution may fail. We may die, old brother, but the revolution is eternal, like that. It's these mottos, and people, they realize it, they feel it, you know. But it's like heroic, it's passionate, but they can't describe it scientifically yet, you know. They feel it, they can feel it. And then after that, when the form of the Paramatma becomes four arms, the eyes are like dancing eyes and eyebrows like a pair of dancing fish surrounding a lotus flower, and then the lifting black body. That's what I think of the full Paramatma, you know, comprehension is there. And you see him as you see Gavadaksha addition face to face with his form. But before that, we're just seeing, you know, in the city. Again, go to some city, money's good, people are clean, things are going on. And you know, it's respect that, you know, it's a good mayor in this place, you know, but you don't know, you know. It must be a nice mayor, you know. The sort of guys you begin to see him on a committee or something, you know. Work with him, but sit a bit more in person, but you're really feeling, yeah, it's his energy that makes it work. But it's not his energy, it's somebody else. It's like, he's a nice guy, but the person that makes it work is his wife. You know? And later on, you start to meet, you know, meet them and have, see them or something like that, you know. So, again, it's just a different set of levels, you know.
So then Hiranyagarbha worship is, it's not realization of the super soul, but rather an inkling that there is a controller beyond the Virat, there's a controller.
Yeah. And again, probably I didn't seem to actually say this, but the term is used that way. Like when Kapila's talking about it, and then what Brahma is talking about, you know, there is a point, you know, where he's talking about the golden seed is created and it's sat there, and this, the golden egg also. Like the Garba also a seed or egg like that. Yeah.
Yeah. All right, thank you.
Okay. Yeah.
Roger, you're giving a nice description of spring, and we see that even here in Hawaii, certainly a more subtle form of it, but definitely spring comes. But yet, so you're saying if someone is in, someone must be in control, but yet you were also describing so many irregularities. Sometimes spring will come, but yet it gets so cold that many crops become destroyed because it doesn't seem that it's always perfectly in sync, which would perhaps give evidence to the description of demoniac, Jagan Ahor Anishwaram, that they, Ahor Anish, they declare that there's no one in control. If someone's in control, it seems like they're not watching carefully, not doing a very good job, if so many irregularities are taking place.
That's a very good point, yeah. And so, because that's the Om Purnama Dha Purnami Dham. Everything's complete. So there probably, I think, talks about a little bit nicely, saying that we see the irregularities and the incomplete stuff because we don't see the whole picture like that. Yeah? And so, you know, the same way is that, you know, science can describe things, but the irregularities, and as we start to investigate more, we find the subtler rule, you know, and it's the more detailed cause and effect like that. For example, a child may see his father goes to work every day, but some days he doesn't go to work. You know? So he says, what is that? two days of the week he doesn't go to work, huh? And I remember specifically that every day had a number and a name. And why do you need two things? Well, one is give it a name or a number, you know? I was sitting in my kitchen. I must have been maybe like about 3 years old or something. And so then I kind of accepted it, but it just didn't make sense. You know, why do you have to have two designations for things, you know, so on. But that's because there are two different, two different cycles or rhythms going on like that and so on. So I think it's our point is that, you know, we're not trying to force anybody, but as we go on, we begin to discover, yeah, even the irregularities and stuff like that, they're coming for a certain purpose, you know. And it's kind of like weasel words is that, you know, God agrees that those people who don't want to see him, then he'll create a situation that they can believe it, you know. So it's like, of course, the other side of the coin is the same thing, too, is that, I don't know how they explain the regularities. Our regularities, how they explain that, you know, that's more difficult. It's more difficult to start with chant and come to regularities than to have some irregularities and say that God's a person and he's like, you know, giving you a chance to like deny his existence. Which I think in social relations, when it comes to social relations, I think it's very natural because you see those parents and authorities and anybody who's an authority, they know. So they don't push people. You've got to give them a chance to, you know, to have their space and stuff, and even though it's not proper, and to think they're in control and, you know, let them experience the hard way. But that's about it, kind of, as much as I would be able to kind of talk about it, because it's a good argument. You
know? We could also say, I guess, that the irregularities are all part of the perfection and the fact that someone is in control, because if we can accept the law of karma and decadence and misbehavior, then irregularities will come. A child may be chastised if his behavior is poor. And with all the decadence we see in our society, it would perhaps, from another angle of vision, give credence that there is someone in control, that things are not going to go perfectly. If there's going to be slaughterhouses and there's going to be abortions and all of these things, then as a natural consequence, someone is in control. And reactions come. And these irregularities are all part of the perfect control.
Yeah, that's what I think. Om Purnam Adaha Purnam Idam. That's where we probably makes that point, that we see things not complete. And there's no controller because we don't see the full picture.
Yeah, it's a great.
There's so many times, like, again and again, you know, the school of hard knocks. You know, everyone knows this. Even the atheists, everyone else, is that everybody knows that. You know, people have to learn the hard way. It's just like that's like a universal rule. You know, so we got to give people a chance to like, you know, mess things up, and so on. You know. So the irregularities and stuff like that, if somebody's creating it or something like that, you know, it's interesting, yeah, it's hot. Because, you know, the earth is turning and this and that, and where do the irregularities come from? You know, our speed is regular, rotating, and everything else, and you know, it's kind of strange. Where do they come from? the irregularities, you know, because everything is all so bizarre, because, you know, How do the regularities come by chance? Okay, well, once you got them, and then if you saw these regularities, you know, then chance is still acting here and there, creating earthquakes and shifting the continents, and so crazy. You know?
Just like they have that big mudslide in Washington State. It just came sliding down, and so many people were just, you know, buried in mud. I mean, we just see irregularities, all over the planet, with, you know, fires and droughts and tsunamis and floods and so many irregularities. But yet we could see from the vision of the Bhagavatam that under the guidance of a God-conscious king, there were no irregularities.
Yeah. Okay. It says what you just did when you saw these irregularities before, you know, Arjuna came back. And it says seasonal anachronisms. You know, one season appearing and another season like that and so on. Yeah. No chance. Yeah. But even mudslides, you know, probably what will happen, people become concerned about it and they'll start to look at their neighborhood and this and that and see, you know, what the possibilities are. You know, the more rapid form, of course, is avalanches. And so there's so much, you know, so much study of avalanches and everything else like that and how to build up, what's going to happen, what causes them and everything else. You know. So, you know, what is unpredictable and having that chance today, that's the whole purpose of science, to explain everything.
In the news, they always seem to interview like the sister of someone who just got killed, or the brother, a friend, or a neighbor. Oh, they're such a good person. They were always they're always doing good for others, but not seeing that there was some definite karma there. They're trying to make it as if there was no karma, as if there was no reason for it, as if it was completely unfair.
Yeah. And it's subtly attacking the idea of God. Yeah. The controller behind the thing. I mean, all these guys, so many people died or drowned in the tsunami. Yeah, but how many of them were fishermen? How many of them had taken these poor fish out of the water and just tossed them around where they suffocated out of their environment? That's an interesting statistic. You know? And so, yeah, so somehow or other, we've been killing all these fish, and now, you know, we get killed, and we make a big fuss about it, you know? Yeah.
So all these people sitting around eating steaks and burgers and hot dogs and chicken and chips and fish and all that, chicken nuggets, whatever all this stuff is, and it's not surprising that awful things happen, but they don't show that. They make it appear as
also
if this was a completely innocent person.
Shihari, he's like Dallas. He's his boss is directly works with the head of water resources for the state of Idaho. And so he talks to the guy. He's PhD, nice to meet him. Very friendly terms. And he's telling us now, people now that they suck so much water out of these underground aquifers that, you know, it's the law. You know, you have to pump back in salt water or mud and stuff. And so even if you start looking at these so-called random mudslides, it may very well be that it's because, you know, we've been sucking all the foundation water out, and now the basis is not steady, and these things are starting to happen like that. Not saying every case, but again, you start getting into it, it may not be that God is all that, you know, capricious. You know, it's actually because of the things we're doing to nature. We're sucking her blood and tissue out, and then she has a natural vomiting reaction or something, you could be blaming her of that. Yeah. So it seems like, you know, again, it's pretty much simple. You know, it's actually one simple verse, and, you know, not very complicated. And after this, you know, Brahma will go ahead and say, yes, you know, wonderful question. You're such a nice person, ask us a nice question for all of our benefits. And he's saying, yeah, then he starts to describe Krishna, his Lord, and very nice, you know, his description. And maybe our question about Hiranyagarbha will be a little more answered. The whole thing, each time you go through it, you're more attentive. You have a hypothesis about what's happening, what's not happening. And so you can study with more intelligence. It's going to be nice, you know, seeing how Brahma actually describes his Lord. It's full of kind of rasa, kind of rasa. And then and part of that whole process will be then also how that Lord incarnates. This is one whole chapter. And then specifically, Brahma will go into the greatest detail we've had so far about how the elements are created and so on. You know? And this basic description, and you can go from this to like into Gandharva Veda, Arya Veda, Vastu Veda. You know, for example, the first element is space. You know? which is created by sound, like that. So you should be conscious of this during the care time. You realize that, yeah, the rhythm, you know, and the tonality, it starts to create a whole kind of like space, you know, for the song and the music and the kirtan and the incarnation of the holy name. It has this, you know, this space, this texture, this color, all this kind of stuff. But this is the first result of a good kirtan is a desire to dance, you know? Okay, so first is space, then after that comes prana, and then texture, color. Texture, then color, like that. So that's just Gandharva Veda, you know? Is that you know, has to come to this point where the rhythm is there, where people start to want to dance, you know, move, you know. And when that happens, then you can start having color you know, in the kirtan like that and stuff, you know? You know, other sciences too. So really studying these things and thinking about them, you actually really fit into in your life. You can actually see how you practically, you know, work. You know? It's a very, very good description of nature. So I guess that's it. Any more questions, I guess then we should go on here with our process at noontime.
Hare Krishna Maharaj, thank you so much for giving class today. I hope this isn't too much off the subject, but you were speaking about making some speculations about mudslides and earthquakes and tsunamis and such. I was just wondering, and maybe ISKCON made an official statement, I don't know, but a large number of cows froze this past winter. And I've thought about this a lot because Krishna loves cows so much, and I just wondered if you had any speculation on that.
No.
Okay.
That's what is it? You take birth as a cow, one of these, like, you know, the misfortune of cows, if you kill a cow, you know, something like that. You know, probably, as I told you, the Dharma Shastras, 81 Dharma Shastras, 24 Dharma Shastras, and they describe these things, like, look at what the reaction is. Like, if you kill a cow, and you take birth as a cow 100 times, and you get killed, or something like that, or 1,000 times, you know. And, of course, you know, I think there's a difference in killing an innocent cow, milk cow, and then killing some, you know, horrible cow, you know, bad character born to be, you know, eaten and so on like that, different reaction. But that's, you know, I think too, there's a Krishna likes the brahmanas too, but they're also brahma rakshasas, you know. So on.
Okay, Maharaj.
Thank you.
Okay. So it was very interesting. It was our first time doing this by telephone, you know, and so on. But it was hopefully pretty nice like that. Okay, so thank you very much. We'll look forward to
thank you, Maharaj.
And seeing how Brahma describes the universe.
Jai.
Hare Krishna.
Jai. See you next week. Glory to Prabhupada.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.